Nashville's favorite way to wake up. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery, with Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, and Kevin Ingram.
The Zone, 701. Welcome back. This is the Wake Up Zone. We're powered by the Tennessee Lottery. If you're looking for a way to put a little play in your day, play Lotto America, the $1 game that has jackpots rich enough to make you rich enough. They have drawings every Wednesday and Saturday. Make sure to go by any Tennessee Lottery retailer and play today. They also sponsor our segments with this man from the Nashville Post, the one and only David Beauclair. What's going on?
Not a lot. How we doing?
We're good. What's up with you?
Nothing like a little controversy to drag down another playoff season, huh?
Yeah. What did you think of that? You're talking about the St. Louis-San Jose game. The Sharks win in overtime, and what it looked like was a hand pass to set up the goal by Erik Karlsson. What did you see?
Yeah, Didn't look like a hand pass.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there's any question that it's a hand pass. And you know, Blaine was talking about it last hour. And I was that was my initial reaction, was sort of like, well, it's a goal. Why, you know, just review it. I mean, I'm not sure why they haven't figured out that you should be able to review all goals, you know, whatever the circumstance, because you can look at goalie interference. You can go back and look at offside. I mean, that should, you know, the NFL figured that out years ago.
Yeah, any scoring plays
and turnovers. Let's just look at them automatically.
Yeah, every element
those,
of the play.
You know, those are huge moments.
And it
especially
doesn't take
when
long.
You're especially when you're talking about overtime. You know, the margin between winning and losing in playoff hockey can be so small, and I can imagine that the Blues are just bitter today. So, but they're gonna have to. They're going to have to get over that, I guess.
Yeah, when they put on the headsets, they're like, well, I didn't realize, yeah. I guess, at first that's something that you couldn't change. Yeah. And so when the officials first put on the headsets, they're like, well, you know, they'll change this and go from there. But, yeah, they can't fix that one.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because, you know, it was such an interesting game, too, and sort of the back and forth and the you know, to have it end on a play like that, you just it really is, it's dissatisfying. But this is, you know, this is part of, I mean, this is part of the instant replay era too. Now that you feel like everything should be, you know, I mean, what, 15 years ago you would have just said, wow, that's bad luck, sorry, yeah. Blues, and everybody, you know, everybody would have moved on. But now it's, you know, every time anything happens, it's like, well, this has to be reviewable now. And I mean, I don't know where it ends with instant replay.
I kind of have that debate myself because I know you guys probably feel the same way. I want them to get it all right, but I don't want the games to just have these interminable delays where you sit and watch and wait and it just never, it takes them forever to decide. I was doing a baseball game the other night. They reviewed a pickoff play at first base and it took you know, a few minutes. I'm like, wow, I can't believe they're actually looking at this. Instead of you know, the game just going on and say, well, you missed that one.
I mean, at some point, the sports world is going to have to just give itself over to technology and find a way where everything is sort of reviewed automatically and quickly and, you know, forget trying to let the guys on the field have a look at it. And, you know, I mean, like I was watching a major league game the other night. You know, the K zone is up there. And I'm thinking, you know, that technology exists. Like, why is there a human being behind the plate calling balls and strikes now when it, you know, I mean, you can see sometimes guys have such ridiculous strike zones. I mean, the K zones there, just use it. Let's keep the game moving. There's no arguing with the umpire. You either hit the target or you don't. And, you know, let's keep things going. I'm almost at that point. Like, let's just give the games over to technology.
Well,
completely.
I mean, look, if tennis can get it right, and that's always the argument I make, it's like tennis has figured this out and they figured it out years and years ago. But sports that make way more money and are way more important to the American sports landscape can't seem to figure out that robots and lasers and all these things can really expedite this process and keep things moving and avoid a whole lot of needless arguments.
Yeah, and avoiding the arguments, I think, is the big thing. I mean, ultimately, you don't have to be happy about whatever the call is, but it becomes tough to argue with.
So ultimately, then, we're going to have robots out there? At some point,
yeah,
Umpire 3000.
I mean, it's not. I'm not saying the Terminator. I mean, Robert Patrick's not out there. But.
I mean, seriously. Let's take this as far as you can. I mean, who's to say you can't have an entire NFL officiating crew in a booth. And my job is to watch the left tackle on every play. Yeah. And your job is to watch the left guard. And your job, like, you know, let's eliminate, you know, like if you think holding is a huge problem, let's have eyes on every one of these guys. And just as soon as you see something, you hit a button, you know, the
referee makes the announcement.
There's only one referee on the field.
Let's be real.
I mean, let's be real. We had dudes measuring with an index card last year in 2018 on Sunday Night Football.
I couldn't believe that.
I mean, but if you have this, I mean, I almost feel like that's where we're heading with it. You know, like at some point, you're just going to have to give the games over to technology and let, you know, and officiate them that way, because that's the only way you're going to be able to satisfy folks now, when, you know, because you can't have the always, well, the technology was there, why didn't we use it? Like in this case. And I don't think we're that far off, honestly.
Yeah. Go ahead, Blaine. Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, the one about using some sort of technology to call balls and strikes in baseball, to me, is a really interesting one, because, mm-hmm. you know, I've thought about this. Several different things determine baseball games that you don't necessarily see in a box score. And to me, balls and strikes and how that part of the game is called, it's such an important part of that, because it sets a tone for everything. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's not consistent.
And you see it particularly with a starting pitcher who's six or seven innings into a game and is pitching well. You know, all of a sudden the umpire sort of gets caught up in the moment too. And like, hey, this guy's really dealing. And
so I'm going to start giving him more of the edge. Yeah,
all of a sudden the plate gets 2 inches wider on each side, basically. And even like NBA officials, when they get so animated and calls and dramatic moments,
they want to be superstars in the NBA.
It's like they understand this is a big call. Like, all calls should be the same, right? Like,
I thought officials got it all right, and I was a kid, and then my dad was like, we were watching ACC basketball when I was growing up, and he would just say, oh, Dick Paparo is calling this game.
Yeah.
And then I would figure out Dick Paparo wanted to be a star, just like Joey Crawford wants to be a star, makes these really histrionic just moves out there. And the argument of human error has always been a part of the game. Yeah, but technology hasn't been. Technology wasn't available 60 years ago. I didn't have a cell phone in my hand. I had a rotary phone, you know, 20 years ago at my parents' house. Like, things change. You can evolve with the times.
I'm one. I don't want to know referees' names. I shouldn't know who those linemen. Guys are. Yeah. I mean, I don't. And I hear it all the time, like at Vanderbilt basketball games. And it's part of what coaches do. You know, coaches scout the referees and they know what they're going to get or what they should be getting on a given night. And so, you know, it sort of comes up when you're talking to folks before a game or whatnot. Oh, you know, coach said this guy is, you know, like, I don't want to know that stuff. Like, you should just, you know, but that's where we are, because when you have these reviews now, you're talking about who made the call I think we're headed into Big Brother land for sports here.
I mean, balls and strikes have been called right on video games for 25 years. Yeah. It's like, just watch that and be right there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bad look for the NHL for sure. They're going to change that rule this summer. But you were talking about, you know, Vandy basketball. What do you think about what they're doing in recruiting there at Vandy with Stackhouse and crew?
You know, they had a really good roll going. The last 2 days kind of petered out on them, where they lost lost the kid out of Alabama and the transfer from Cal. But, I think it was a good start for him, you know, because you see that when guys come in and they don't have a lot of time. And in this case, he had a couple of spots to fill that he wasn't planning on filling with Yanni Wetzel and Matt Ryan leaving. You sort of feel like, again, I've not seen Scottie Pippen Jr. play. I've not seen K.J. Martin play. I've not seen Jordan Wright, the kid out of Louisiana, play. But you sort of feel like, okay, you know, I see what he's doing. He certainly had some success getting in front of these guys. Of course, Bryce Drew did a lot of the legwork on Scottie Pippen. But you feel like the fact – I mean, one of the big questions with Jerry Stackhouse was he's never been in college, you know, hasn't had to recruit. Mm-hmm. You know, how could he do it? You know, in the comments you read from some of these guys after they settled on Vanderbilt, it sounded like he was he was very clear in imparting his vision to them and got guys to buy in. So I think that from that perspective, it was a good start for him.
Yeah, I thought, you know, that he would do fine in recruiting just because of who he is. And naturally, he's been in that circle before. But now it's still going to come down to him going in the X and O's against some of these veteran coaches in the SEC now, which is right at a high level when you compete against other big-time conferences. They are at the top of the heat right now.
I mean, it's clear. It's clear he likes size. We'll put it, you know, Jordan Wright, the guard out of Louisiana, is 6'6". KJ Martin is 6'6", and apparently, like his dad, you know, is kind of long. He went after the 7'3" kid. I mean, clearly, Jerry Stackhouse wants size. He wants bigger bodies, and I think that'll be worth watching with the next round of recruiting. Now, like I'm guessing you're gonna see some 6'8" guys and just sort of that sort of. I'm thinking you're gonna have a point guard and maybe four other guys, and positions won't.
Well, he was a physical player. I mean, yeah, that's how he played it in North Carolina. That's how he played in the NBA. He's known to be a tough-nosed guy, so I'm not surprised he's trying to get guys that can bang as opposed to just shooters everywhere.
Yeah.
7:12, the Wake Up Zone. Our friend David Beauclair from the Nashville Post is with us. He's brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. If you'd like to join us, we'll get into a lot of local stuff this hour. 615-737-1045 or on Twitter at WUZ1045. The Wake Up Zone's coming. .1045 The Zone. Time is 7:18 here in the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Reminder, the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony is coming up June 15th at the Omni Hotel. Features Peyton Manning, David Cutcliffe, Charles Davis, Carol Lawson, Kippy Brown, Patrick Willis, Amy Adams Strunk, the Tennessean of the Year. A whole lot more coming up. Omni Hotel, June 15th, downtown. Tables of 10 and individual tickets are available now. 615-418-9595. Secure your spot today. 615-418-9595. You get more information at 1045thezone.com. I have our friend David Beauclair with us, powered by the Tennessee Lottery as well. So if you'd like to join us, anything local, 615-737-1045. Tennessee Lottery proud to have raised more than $5 billion for education.
Yeah. Well, quickly, I wanted to ask him. I know we were talking about superstitions. I know you've been reporting for a long time, but take yourself back to your fan days. Did you have any superstitions regarding your teams or anything like that?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was, you know, when things were going well, you stay where you're seated. We're seated in the living room.
Oh, like the Jason Martin level.
Yeah, at one point, after my mom got remarried, we had like 7 or 8 kids in the house at a time. And, you know, it'd be a Sunday afternoon. I'm watching the Eagles playing, and I'd get up to get a drink or something. Some come back. I can remember literally like pitching a fit at one of my stepbrothers, like, get the hell up now. You know, that's where I was sitting. This game is going well. Like I was serious about it. Yeah. And I can remember one time being at a basketball game, sitting next to somebody. It was around Christmas time. And they were wearing a Santa Claus hat, and things weren't going well. And they said, "Here, you put the hat on." So I put the hat. So I put the Santa Claus hat on, and like if the beanie was flopping to the left at that point, I said, "No, see what's wrong here." I said, "The beanie's flopping to the left." I said, "You have to flop it to the right because that's the way the team is going." Oh. And things like literally got better from there. And so halftime came, and the person who gave me the hat is like, "Well, you need to flip it over." I said, no, not till the second half starts. So once the second half started, I flipped the beanie, and things still went well. And yeah, that was one I remember vividly too. Okay, well, you got to know your role.
Yeah. I mean, when you get to that post game press conference, you've got to say you did your role. And yeah, if you're not doing your part as a fan,
yeah,
that's going to be a tough question to answer. You're going to have to go Rasheed Wallace on it. Just both teams play hard. And that's all you got.
I don't feel bad about anything I've done now, listening to the Santa Claus hat story.
I mean, you're throwing out food, bro. I mean, there's people that that could use that. You're just tossing out Skittles because the colors match Belmont's opponent.
Well, the fans for the Predators must not have been doing their job, man. I mean, what's going on here with the Predators? Where do you think they're going to go with Kyle Turris or PK or whoever may be on the trading block?
You mean Captain Kyle Turris, Team Canada's captain?
Tell us now, that's a big difference in playing over there than here.
There's a huge difference in, I mean, literally a big difference in the size of the ice surface. And that's, you know, that's been the knock on Kyle Turris, is that he doesn't like to be hit, you know, likes to have room to go and skate. You have that room over there on the European ice surface. Now, granted, too, I mean, Canada has played Great Britain, and they, you know, it's not, I mean, they're not playing NHL players kind of every time out there. But, you know, to me, the decision to make him captain was just really curious from the perspective of, I mean, he's coming off two terrible playoff runs, a terrible season. And even if he had played well, he's not a big personality. He's not a big presence. He's not a talkative guy. Like the whole thing was just odd to me that Canada would pick him as its captain. But you know, I mean, yeah, what do you do with him if you're the Predators? That's the question, because you know, he's had almost two full seasons as your number two center, and all you're saying right now is we need more secondary scoring, which is what you were saying before you got him. So you know, and he's not a guy like Nick Bonino was the first guy they brought in a couple years ago to be their number two center. They didn't like the fit right away, but Nick Bonino's a guy who can do other things for you, right? You drop him down to the third or fourth line. He's good in that role. He plays great defensively. He's a good penalty killer. You know, he's a guy you can have on your team. If Kyle Turris isn't good as your number two center, what else can he do for you? There's really nothing else. So, I mean, you have to try to find a way to move him out of here. The contract is going to make it very difficult to do so. I don't think the Predators want to eat part of that contract, because they're trying to free up money to go get a Matt Duchene or somebody, you know, somebody who will be a better second line center. So maybe you make a deal for somebody who was underachieving somewhere else, and you just hope the change of scenery works, bringing them here. To me, Kyle Turris is the biggest question for this team this offseason. You know, what do you do with him? How do you sort of correct what looks like a pretty big mistake right now?
Right. And speaking of mistakes, where would you rank this as far as free agent signings or trades or whatever you want to call it on Poyle's list?
If last,
you want
to call it last couple that. Of years, it just hadn't worked out.
Yeah, I don't.
He's not on the,
I don't
on the list.
Think the trade was a mistake. I think, you know, at that point it was, but to sign him to that contract, basically sight unseen, like he hadn't played a game for this team. You know, I've never been sure. Even when that happened, I wasn't sure why they felt compelled to give him that deal right then and there. That's what I don't get, and now they're paying for it quite literally.
So if you had to get rid of one of the defensemen, though, who do you think has more value on the market that they could trade and really help their team out and getting something back?
Well, it kind of depends on what your primary goal there is. If it's simply to free up money, you know, then you say, well, PK Subban has to go, because that's going to free up the most money. The guy I think you can make the most interesting trade out of is probably Mattias Ekholm, because he's a good player. Teams that are in need of defensemen would look at him and say, that's somebody we can play as part of our first defense pairing. But he's young enough, his contract is good enough. I think you could probably create a really interesting package with a guy like that, where you can probably feel like you get more back than you're giving up if you're trading a Mattias Ekholm. And Ekholm's one of those guys, you know, I've talked about it sort of with Arvidsson. Ekholm's a guy who has not played his best hockey in the playoffs the last couple of years. You know, I don't think there's any question he's a good player. You know, he's a player you like to have on your team. But if the ultimate goal is to win the Stanley Cup, and you're saying, this guy hasn't really helped us a whole lot. You know, it can sort of make it easy to say, well, let's move him out and try something else now.
We were talking about the article Scott Burnside wrote in The Athletic, and a lot of what he said was some of the same things we talked about with Turris and some of the other players. But, you know, he quoted some general managers and scouts talking about how the team looks slower than it did. And to me, that was noticeable.
Oof.
But then another one said that, well, what this team could use is Shea Weber. Look, well, if they had Shea Weber back, that doesn't make him any faster. I don't know how you sort of put all that together, but I kind of get what it's saying on both counts too.
Well, and this is what the Predators went all in on the speed thing a couple of years ago.
He was talking about also identity,
and I'm I'm perfectly okay with that. You know, be what you are, mm-hmm. and it worked for them for 2 years. Where it's not working now is the forwards don't look as fast, or everybody else has forwards who are just as fast. Whatever it is, they don't have the speed advantage up front, and where it's hurting them is all the skating ability they have on the back end. They have nobody who can take somebody and pin them to the boards and hold them there, and that's what you see the good defensive teams doing is their defensemen can take somebody, just lock them up against the boards or move them away from the front of the net, just physically say, you're not going where you want to go. The Predators have nobody on their back end right now who can keep opposing forwards from going where they want to go if those guys really want to get there. And that's, I think that's where the Shea Weber comment comes from.
You need defensemen who play like defensemen.
Yeah.
727, the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. We're talking with David Beauclair from the Nashville Post. Read his work at NashvillePost.com. We'll ask him some Titans questions when we come back. Our show continues after this. Let's send it over to Blaine, though, first, in a word about Gary Ashton.
Yes, I've been telling you about Gary Ashton's team at RE/MAX Advantage for a while now. They are Tennessee's number one real estate team. And one of the reasons why they're Tennessee's number one real estate team is because of innovations like reverse search real estate. What is reverse search real estate, you ask? It's a way of finding out all the buyers in Nashville looking for a home just like yours before you put it on the market. The technology works by leveraging the biggest database on Nashville real estate. You type in your address and how much you want to sell for, and boom, you can see all the buyers looking for your kind of home. That's why they say don't sell without the intel. Plus, your listings come up first on their site. That's the Ashton advantage. So go give Gary Ashton's team a call today at 615-301-1650, or you can visit them online at GaryAshton.com. But if you call today, Gary will donate $50 to Vanderbilt Children's Hospital for every listed appointment he goes on. So give him a call, 301-1650, or online at GaryAshton.com. Oh.
The Zone, 7:34. This is the Wake Up Zone. We're powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Have some fun with Tennessee Lottery Instant Games. You can play the May Instant Games. Top prizes range from $5,000 to $500,000. Go by any Tennessee Lottery retailer and pick them up. Lots of different games you can play. They also sponsor our segments every week with our friend David Beauclair from the Nashville Post. Want to join us here? He covers everything locally. 615-737-1045 or on Twitter at WUZ1045. When throw in a question that way. You can also take part in our Twitter question this morning. Mr. Schaefer has put up on Twitter, what is your sports superstition? What is your sports superstition? We've had some good stuff from everybody in this room. Really have.
Yeah.
David, you saw some young players embarking on their NFL careers last weekend as the Titans had the rookie camp. What did you take away from some of those sessions?
From what you saw.
From the 20 minutes you saw, what did you take away?
Actually, I didn't even make it out there. So I don't know. There's usually very little to be gleaned from that mini camp, other than you want to see if there's a big guy who can really move. You kind of want to see how fast, like if I was out there, I would have looked to see like how fast is AJ Brown and how big does he look compared to the other wide receivers. I mean, that's all you're doing. You know, Mike Vrabel talked about it, said, you know, they throw a lot of information at him. They want to see who can sort of process it and put it into action on the field pretty quickly. Well, one thing that did not surprise me at all was that Ladarius Wiley got a contract out of it. You know, the Vanderbilt safety.
Oh yeah,
when I saw the list of tryout guys, I mean, honest to goodness, I thought that's a guy who's going to take advantage of it. I mean, he's a football player, and he's a guy who could very easily end up on the 53-man roster when all is said and done, too, because you know he'll help you on special teams right away. He's you know, just a real smart, competitive guy. I think
nice size too.
I think he's exactly the kind of guy that the Titans are looking for.
What do you think held him back as far as being drafted or being kind of in that first wave?
I don't know. I guess he's probably not, you know, I guess his speed is ordinary, but I think he's one of those guys who plays faster than he is. I guess there's nothing extraordinary because he's not the biggest, but he's big enough. He's not the fastest, but he's fast enough. Sure. I just think in the draft you're looking for guys who have special talents, and I think Ladarius Wiley's just one of those good football players.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Devin Ross being released? I know I saw that and I was a little perplexed because he kind of made it as an undrafted guy. Yeah. I mean, well, initially he got cut, didn't he? He got injured, then he came back, and then they brought him in. Then he contributed and did actually. For an undrafted guy, I thought he did pretty good. So to get cut this soon with really nothing at stake, it was kind of a little odd. I don't know if something happened there.
Yeah, he's a guy you felt like was going to get, you know, certainly wasn't guaranteed a spot, right. but was going to be given every opportunity. It almost makes you feel like there was a little something off the field or, you know, and that's just a guess. I certainly don't know anything in that regard, but I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, If you're gonna be cutting a guy loose at this time of year, why that guy? It seems like there's you know, a bunch of other guys. Unless they felt like, you know, they felt like they've seen all they need to see out of him, and he's not going to show them anything different this offseason. You know, and it's a situation. Maybe we can bring him back if we feel like we need to, but maybe they just feel like they know exactly what he is and don't want to be taking a look at him at this point.
Well, you know, one more thing, at least for me, as far as the Titans is that, you know, Peter King wrote an article about that the Titans are going to be, what, 25th?
25th, yeah, in his offseason rankings.
Based his offseason ranking. For what it's worth, I mean, it was really based off of Marcus and how well he played. Yeah. And it really shows that he really didn't believe in Marcus, even though this was contract year and he probably didn't think he could stay healthy. I mean, I was a little surprised that it was that low. I was thinking teens, maybe 18 at worst.
Right. Yeah. But 25
is putting you down there in the stratosphere. You're going to be a top five pick in the draft the next year. And I don't know. I thought that was a little far reaching.
I think it's more based on the division, and you know the Colts clearly look like a really good team. Mm. He probably sees Nick Foles to Jacksonville as a big move and thinks Jacksonville is much more the 27 Jaguars than the 2018 Jaguars. Mm-hmm. So you've got to bump them up. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. If he looks at it and says the Titans are the fourth best team in the division, then that's probably why he has to put them down at that level. But I agree. I mean, 25 seems pretty low.
Yeah, that's territory that doesn't make sense to me. I would like to know what his quarterback ratings are.
Yeah.
1 to 32 and see if he's that low on Marcus. I have Marcus in like the 18 to 20, somewhere in that range. There. And I had him there last year as well. But there are other parts on this team that you like.
Yeah, I mean, you could convince me the Titans are the 20th best team in the NFL. You could probably convince me they're the 11th or the 12th best team in the NFL. If you wanted to make that case, I think you could do that either way. But I'll agree with you there, Blaine. 25 seems low.
I also think people are still overvaluing Nick Foles.
Right.
I mean, we'll see.
But I
feel like Nick Foles, and this has been kind of my phraseology on it from the beginning. I believe he's a backup disguised as a starter. Because the situation he left is not the situation he just inherited in Jacksonville.
Right. And it sort of feels like he and Doug Peterson are a good partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And maybe it doesn't work anywhere else. I mean, it certainly didn't work with the Rams. It certainly didn't work with Kansas City.
But I think the offensive coordinator is someone who is in.
Yeah, I mean, he did
with the same with the Eagles there that they.
Is it Defoe? Is that who's down there now?
Yeah, I think it's someone affiliated in that they know he can run the offense. Yeah, they're going to lean toward his traits.
DeFilippo and Bowles didn't even get along.
Yeah, but Doug Peterson runs that offense. Yes. I know. I mean, it feels to that. That's what it feels like to me. That like Peterson and Foles just sort of mesh well, and Peterson brings out the best in him in a way that you know maybe nobody else can. You know, some guys, any coach will do, and some guys just work well with a particular one or two.
He had a phenomenal year. This is only his other year that I'm giving credit for, because the rest of them were just average, kind of like Marx's when he was with Chip Kelly that first year. Yeah, he only threw two picks. Looked phenomenal.
Yeah, he 23 touchdown passes or whatever. I mean, he's a smart guy. And the other thing with him going to Jacksonville, though, is there's a lot of attitude in that locker room.
A ton of attitude.
And he's not. No. I don't know that he'll be comfortable in that room. I think
maybe he's a calming influence. It's possible he's an affable guy.
He's a guy that seems like he's a teammate, people like it.
Yeah, exactly, which I love. But the other thing is, he doesn't have a whole lot of talent around him that he's throwing the football to either.
Yeah.
Like the receiving talent in Jacksonville, that's still something that needs to be addressed to give him a better chance.
And if Leonard Fournette's not healthy again, you know, it's I'm not ready to say that the Jaguars are the 2017 Jaguars again. Right. I'm just not there with them. I could see how it could happen, but I'm gonna have to see more from them first.
Friend David Beauclair joins us every Thursday morning right here on the Wake Up Zone, brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. 7:42 the time. More of our show coming up next here on the
Classic.
Zone. 104.5 the Zone, 7:49. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Sponsors our visits every week with our friend David Beauclair from the Nashville Post. Read his work at NashvillePost.com. PGA Championship is underway this morning at Bethpage up in New York. -1 is leading the way. Sam Burns and Keith Mitchell, whoever they are, -1 through six holes. You look on down the way, J.B. Holmes, a Kentuckian, at 1 under par. Brooks Koepka, 1 under. He's played one hole. Tiger Woods, though, made a double on the first. Brent Snedeker, 1 over through five. We'll keep you posted on what's happening as we move through the morning here.
Tiger right out of the gates.
Multiple dudes at 6 over right now, 5 holes in. Man. It's not the best course for Snedeker this week.
No, not really. It's probably why he'll go out and win.
Yeah, that would be something. I fear his window for winning a major has closed on him.
Seems like 3-4 years ago he was one of those guys you were looking at with that young guns crop of guys that were really sort of on the cusp, and you were waiting for when, not if. Now I think that's kind of flipped to if not when.
Never know. Golf's a different game. But I kind of agree with you guys, though, that it feels like the time is getting short as far as his opportunity.
He's not as consistent in the majors as he was, too. Like, he had a run there of, 3 or 4 years where it felt like he was always around
always
the top
the mix
20,
so,
top
on
20.
Sunday.
Yeah. Like at some, or it, even on, like, even if it wasn't Sunday, at some point he was hanging around near the top. You felt like, okay, if he can, but, you know, and now, like, he's missed some cuts. He's had, you know, obviously the health issues here recently, or the last year or so. It's, There was a time I thought for sure he'd win him a major or two, and I just don't know. I think that anymore.
As long as they're on people from Vanderbilt, the Vandy baseball team heads to Lexington to play their last series of the regular season starting tonight. Did most of the games over the weekend against Missouri, and then Tuesday night against Middle Tennessee. David, it feels like if this team doesn't get to Omaha, it's going to be a disappointment. With the season they've had and the amount of talent they have. Gosh, you look up and down the roster. I mean, they're just loaded, and this feels like it's the time for this group to get
through. The only thing I worry about with them, if I was Tim Corbin, this would scare me. It's almost that they've been too good. They haven't had to come back in the seventh, eighth, ninth innings a lot this year, and you know, at some point in the regional, super regional, you're gonna be behind. You're gonna have to come up with some good at bats, or you're gonna have to, you know, you're really gonna have to pitch out of some tough situations.
No adversity is what you're saying.
Not enough. I mean, we've seen the really good Vanderbilt teams. It felt like they were never out of game. You know, it was like eighth inning, ninth inning, they're down, so what? And this team, they just haven't been in that position very often where
I don't know
that I have that feeling with them. And maybe it'll continue. Maybe they'll just keep beating people into submission through the through the postseason. But they are awful damn good. I mean, when you look at their weekend rotation, you got a guy who's 10-0, a guy who's 9-1, and a freshman who's 6-5. I mean, that's 25-6 from your three weekend starting pitchers. That's pretty good.
And then you got Mason Hickman, who would be a starter for pretty much everybody in the country.
I was going to say the most important guy when you're talking postseason might be Mason Hickman, a guy, you know, when you're at tournament time to have a fourth starting pitcher who's that good.
There can't be anybody in the country that's throwing a guy like him in the Tuesday night game.
I can't remember a season where one guy has had that job all year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always been a sort of let's try this guy tonight or let's try this guy this week. And then, oh, by the way, you've got Austin Martin hitting .432 with what? One weekend to go in the regular season.
That's absurd. It really is. We did the game Friday night, and he had three hits in his first three at-bats, and his batting average was .441 when he came to the plate for the fourth time. And we're talking about middle of May. I it's almost like you had to look at it two or three times to believe that was right. It's just amazing.
They've played 52 games, and he's had multi-hit games 28 times, more than half the time.
Oh, wow.
Is this the most talented Vandy team ever? And I'd say they won a championship because they haven't gotten there yet.
The position players in the lineup, I think it has to be.
It's close.
What team you're comparing it to?
I mean, 2014, the national championship team was good. Like there was nobody. The only thing that I'm hesitant on is 1 through 9. That lineup in 2014, everybody was going to hit. There was no question. It's not necessarily that way with this bunch, but this bunch, there's more guys who hit for power. There's more guys who sort of punish you than I think there was in 2014. It's still hard, that 2014 team had three first round draft picks. That's going to be tough to argue with for
you've been calling their games. What do you think?
See, I thought the 2015 team that lost to Virginia was better than the 2014 team that won it in some ways. But
well, that's true. The 2014 team did struggle during the season, and even got bounced early in the SEC tournament, didn't they?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. I think that's where they took that extra time and rebooted. But I sort of think of 2014, 2015 as sort of one.
Yeah, it's almost like it was one year because it was basically the same team of those 2 years that they got to the finals.
The experience of this bunch and the, you know, J.J. Bleda has just been magical too. Just a guy who I think. And Bleda is a guy I think just inspires confidence in that whole team too. He's the guy you feel like, okay, everything's going to be okay because JJ's going to hit this inning or whatever.
The one thing that would concern me is, and you saw some of that series against Missouri over the weekend, if they face some teams that have really good left-handers, could give them some problems because a lot of their lineup is stocked with left-handed bats. They've got a little bit of everything though, and I think it'll. It should serve them well, and we'll find out starting next week when they play.
Good news is we're going to have some regional baseball back in Nashville after a couple years break. I don't think there's any question about that.
The whole thing is going to be here. They're not going to go on the
road. Super regional. Yep, it'll be nice. Here. And those are always such fun weekends. I really do enjoy them. It's good baseball. It's great competition. I'm looking forward to that.
David, our time goes fast. Thank you.
Yes, it does. Everybody have a good weekend.
It's the same. From the Nashville Post, you can read his work at nashvillepost.com. This is David Beauclair, brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery, every Thursday morning right here on 104.5 The Zone.